The first reading is from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 1 to 9. These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Whakarongo ki te kupu a te wairua ki te hahi. The Holy Gospel according to Mark, chapter 12, verses 28 to 34. The greatest commandment. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," Jesus answered, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." "Well said, teacher," the man replied. "You are right in saying that God is one and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart and with all your understanding and with all your strength, and to love your neighbour as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he had answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions. This is the Gospel of Christ. Te ronga pai tēnei a te karaiti.
Thanks, Gabriel. Yeah, glasses case, got it? Cool, excellent. Well, kia ora everybody. Good morning, how are you doing? You all right? A bit deaf in one ear, said Steve. It'll do that for you. One of the guys that I really looked up to when I was I was in my 20s, was a man called Roger Forster, and he led a group of churches in London, and he was a really, really good teacher and someone who was very humble. He taught me a lot about what humility really looks like, lived out in a human life. And the love of God and Christ. And he just loved the Bible and he loved people and he loved the Lord. Anyway, one of the things that he said how sometimes someone says something and it gets written on your heart kind of thing? You'd carry it from then on. One of the things he said that had that effect on me was the greatest thing anyone can put on someone's tombstone is, they were a great lover of God and a great lover of people. And he said, you know, and something about that made me think, that's what I want to aim for. And it wasn't until probably a few years later that I realized, oh yeah, that's what Jesus says. You know, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. So I was a bit slow. But it's true. I just thought, the way he put it, you know, that's the best thing that you could have on your tombstone, on your gravestone, is they were a great lover of God and a great lover of people. And actually, that's about all there is to say, you know? Yeah. I know, and now I'm sort of in a fix, aren't I? Because that is, that's it. It is it, but it's a lifetime's work, isn't it? It's a lifetime's work. Loving the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, which means all of us. And I really want to say thank you to Summer and Julian, wherever you've ended up sitting. You know, just for that time of worship, for those songs, they express exactly those songs, the kind of spirit, the kind of atmosphere, the kind of direction of our lives that we should be. You know, it's more than a song. You know, it's all of our lives. We want to be able to give something to the Lord that is worthy of him, which is ourselves, you know, all that we have and am and are and, you know, everything. Loving the Lord our God. There's something about, do you remember what we were talking about the heart the other day? I don't know if the heart is, so in our culture, you know, in Disney and all of that, we think of the heart as our emotions. Just follow your heart, you know, follow your emotions. Just forget about thinking about it. Don't think, just follow your heart. The heart in the Bible means the heart of who we are. It's a different kind of heart, as it were. It's the heart of our being, the center, you know, it's the core of who we are. You know, it's like when we use that expression, the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter, the crux of the matter, the crucial bit, the life of the whole thing, actually. That's what the Bible means when it says heart, both in the New Testament and in the Old Testament, the Greek and the Hebrew. Our heart is the center of our being, the core of who we are, you know, what we really sum up to. And therefore, it's actually all of our being. You know, it extends to all of us, including our, you know, because the heart is part of our physical being as well as our spiritual being and everything. You know, a pump, there's actually that organ that is the center of our, you know, I mean, we think of brains as the center sometimes, but, you know, in the ancient world, it was always the heart. So your heart is the core of who you are, and it's the sum of total of who you are in some ways as well. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. Love the Lord your God with everything, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says a bunch of things about the heart, doesn't he? And he says, for example, where your treasure is, there is your heart. Where your treasure is, there is your heart. And he says, out of the heart come all sorts of things, you know, and evil thoughts, adulteries, you know, blasphemy, whatever it is. You know, all these things come out of the heart and turn into an actual thing that we do. Our hearts, the heart of who, the core, where our treasure, where our worship is, actually affects what we, precedes what we do, governs what we, you know, leads what we do. Does that make sense? Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know, what comes out of our hearts is, Jesus says, it's not what you do, your washing or whatever, you know, things that, it's our hearts. And what comes out of them causes murder or adultery or whatever it is, do you know what I mean? Or jealousy or unkindness. These things come from our hearts. In the Old Testament, there's two psalms that say, You know, look at the idols of the nations. Look at the things they worship, they value, that where they've put their hearts, their worship is in these things. And it says, they've got eyes, but they cannot see. They've got mouths, but they cannot speak. They've got feet, but cannot walk, you know, hands, but cannot touch. Yet, those that worship them will become like them. You know, those who follow them will become like them. We become like where our hearts, where your treasure is, there is your heart. And out of the overflow of your heart come all these actions, whatever they are. Isn't that, you know, that's quite telling. I didn't get this really, and I still haven't got it. I didn't get it until I read a book a few years back called You Are What You Love. You Are What You Love. You know, but sort of like that idea, you are what you eat type thing. But actually, he's saying, no, you are what you love. But then he goes on to say, and it's James K.A. Smith, if anyone's interested, you are what you love, he says, but you don't always love what you think you love. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? You know, you are what you love, which is what Jesus says, what we've just been saying now. Out of the overflow of the heart, blah, blah, blah. You know, what you worship, what you value, where your treasure is, there is your heart. You are what you love. You become the thing you love. But we don't always love the thing we think we love. And I thought, actually, he says, what do you do? What do you do first thing in the morning? What do you do last thing at night? What do you spend the majority of your time thinking about or obsessing about or, you know, worried about or concerned about? Because, and what do you spend the majority of your time doing, he says. And I think, oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I... Because those are the things, actually, that I kind of value or love. Or that's where... That is clearly where my heart is. And I'm like, oh my goodness, maybe I need to look at what I'm valuing, what I'm spending my time on, because what I'm spending my time on is probably... or not spending my time on, is saying something about my heart that I didn't realize it was saying. Does that make sense? We are what we love, but we don't always love the thing we think we love. I'll just leave that there, if that's all right. You know, that's a lot to think about. And we could... I mean... The thing that leads on from that is that, well, then maybe if we change what we're doing, it will reorientate our hearts. Does that make sense? You know, so we will make some adjustments. You know, okay, I'm going to try and do the pastoral pause, as someone called it. You know, I'm going to try and not say the first thing that comes into my mind when someone says something that's a little bit confronting or a little, whatever it is, you know, that I react to. And I'm that kind of person, you know, I want to just go boom, straight in. And forgive me for when I've done that. Please. But maybe if I make that adjustment, my heart will start to value something, you know, I'll reset the values in my heart. Because how can we reset the values in our heart? How can we love the right things? How can we love the good? Jesus says, those who love me will obey my commandments. But he also says, you know, it's when you do it that you'll find out that it's the right thing. You know, so... It's a two-way street, the heart. You know, we can mold our hearts. We can turn... If I spend more time with the Lord and with his word, you know, it sounds so basic and so cheesy, but if I do it, I will actually start to value the things God values more. And if I spend less time watching the Disney Channel or whatever it is that I watch, you know... Where the heart is, you know, that the Western idea of the heart, you know, the Disney idea, where the emotions, the feelings are the important thing, or where violence is the answer and power and, you know, getting your will done in the world, superhero style, is the answer. That will shape me. I want to have my heart shaped this way. I do, you know, we've talked about the Psalms quite a bit. I do tend to sing a psalm, actually, or at least read a psalm in the morning and when I can in the evening as well. There's nothing like doing that if you do it every single day, like Christians have done down the years for forever, and the people of Israel before that. Then you start to just be shaped by those words. You start to dwell in those words. Our thinking, our hearts are reorientated. All right, I'm going to stop talking about that. Sorry, is that all right? Does that sort of make sense? Where your treasure is, there is your heart. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then the second commandment, Jesus says, is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's a saying in really, really old Christian saying. It goes all the way back to the Egyptian desert, where, you know, the desert fathers and mothers lived in the sort of 300s and stuff, or 200s, 300s, 400s, 500s. And it goes like this. It's, it's really confronting. Yeah. Because it distills everything down into one sentence, and you kind of go, what? what? And especially if we're brought up as Protestants, which many of us have been, it's like, hang on, that can't be right. But I'll just tell you anyway. Only through our neighbor can we be saved. You're like, no, it's only through Jesus that we can be saved, which is, of course, the truth. And it's contained within those words. It's just not said out loud. But if you read all the stuff, you realize these guys are so serious about being saved by Jesus. But they're taking seriously in that one sentence the second of the greatest commandments that Jesus says. There's none other greater than these. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Only through our neighbor can we be saved. It's exactly what James is saying in his epistle, isn't it? Where James says, you know, if you say you love your brother, you know, and you say you love God, and you say you love your brother, and you know, and then you kind of say, oh, be well fed, and walk past, you know, and he's needy, and you don't actually feed him, that's not love. And he says that kind of faith without any works is dead. It's dead. It's dead faith. That's what James says. Martin Luther hated that verse, and he called the epistle of James an epistle of and straw, and I'm not going to say the word because he was rude. He was, you know, he really didn't like it because, you know, it felt like for him it was saying, you know, he was very much, it's faith or works, you know, and works are dead and we don't do works. The Catholics do works, and we're Protestants, and we do faith. As if it's an either or, when actually for James and for Jesus, it's a both and. We need to love the Lord our God, but it's not some kind of spiritual divorce from what we actually do, because straight away Jesus says we need to love our neighbor as ourselves. And James says, yeah, if we're just kidding ourselves otherwise. We've got a dead faith. Without works. You can't separate those two commandments. And so saying only through our neighbor can we be saved is actually saying these two commandments belong together. You can't separate them. You can't just do one and go, oh, well, I'm not doing the other bit Jesus said. That's the greatest, these two commandments are greater than the greatest. And all the law and the prophets depend on this. Will you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength? And will you love your neighbor as yourself? Because one goes with the other. It's cool, isn't it? I mean, that's what else do you say? I mean, I don't know. I'm not really going to say much else, but I do want to just... There's another way of saying this. And I'm just going to read from... This is a book by Rowan Williams on the Desert Fathers and Mothers. It's a lovely book. It's called Silence and Honey Cakes. And there's a reason for that, but I won't, it's not relevant right now. But another saying from one of the first people to go into the desert, Anthony. It's just a slightly expanded version of the one I just said. And he says, our life and death is with our neighbour. If we win our brother or sister, we win God. If we cause our brother or sister to stumble, we have sinned against Christ. Our life and death is with our neighbour. If we win our brother or sister, we win God. If we cause our brother or sister to stumble, we have sinned against Christ. And he just spends quite a long time unpacking this, and I'd love to be able to read more of it at some other time, but I'll just read a tiny bit of how he unpacks it. Another saying is, if you're occupied with your own faults, you've got no time to see those of your neighbour. And he says, we begin to see here a cluster of ideas generated by the apparently simple words of Anthony. Living in a Christian way with the neighbour, with those whom around us, Christian or not, doesn't matter, but living in such a way that the neighbour is one, i.e. converted or brought into saving relationship with Jesus Christ, that somehow they're connected. We can, you know, living in such a way that we connect people with Christ and with the love of Christ involves, he says, in some way my death. Because I must die to myself. A self understood as the solid possessor of virtues and gifts, entitled to pronounce on the neighbour's spiritual condition. I've got to die to all that. My own awareness of my failure and weakness is indispensable to my communicating the gospel to my neighbour. Because I put the neighbour in touch with God by a particular, well, a way of this way of living, I suppose, that he's trying to talk about. And the Desert Writers and Sisters is absolutely basic for our growth in the life of grace. If, he says, I fail to put someone in touch with God, if I put a stumbling block in the way, I face another sort of death, the death of my relation with Christ. Because failing to win the neighbour is to stand in the way of Christ, to block Christ's urgent will to communicate with all. Christ loves us, loves the world. Christ, our God, is the great lover of the human race. Of all that is. He loves us, as Paul says, even when we're enemies. Even when we're running in the opposite direction from him and denying him and don't want to have anything to do, he loves us. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Not when we got a bit better. He loves the human race that much. He loves you and me that much. And he is trying, he is reaching out to everyone. And if we help some, if we connect someone with God, we've won our neighbour. And we're in the love of God then, aren't we? We're in that flow of the love of God. If we cause someone to stumble or block their access to God by our judgment of them or by our thinking that we've got all the answers. We're bringing something to this person. We've got something, you know, we know what's wrong here and what's right in this person's life. If I think that about somebody, and I jolly well do as well, I'm full of that kind of rubbish. And I think lots of us are, aren't we? You know, if we admit it. I can analyse what's wrong here and I know the answer and, you know, I'm the great person bringing the whatever, the gospel or the love of God or something, actually I'm blocking that person because I'm judging them. If, on the other hand, I go, look, I know I'm full of sin, you know, and I know that I'm proud, I know that I'm judgmental, and I am, and I know that I'm no better than this person, actually, or I can't judge their heart, I can't even judge my own heart, I'm bad at that. And Jesus says, don't judge. I've got no right to judge this person whatsoever. Only God can really look at their heart. If I go with that attitude and I'm like, okay, I know my sins, you know, and I talk to the person, I come across in a very different way, don't I? Does that make sense? And that's the death to self that means that the neighbor can live. I so badly want to go in and tell them what's wrong with their lives. I really do. I want to have a go at them sometime. If they've done something that's offended me, I want to have a go at someone. Wow, it's hard. It's really hard. And then you think, oh, but I'm justified in doing that because they did do something. You know, that's just, I don't know where to begin except to say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And it's that kind of living and dying with our neighbor. Our life and death is with our neighbor. If we win our brother or sister, we win God. If I don't block them, if I don't judge them, if I actually open them up to God and to his love, perhaps by showing that they're not alone, I too am a sinner. If I can do anything to connect that person to God and not block them by pretending I'm better than them, what right have I got to think I'm better than someone else? And I jolly well do it, obviously, we all do. But how do I know? You know, when I stand before God, before the throne, is he going to go, oh yeah, you were better, Mark. You were better than all of those people. Well, I mean, what? I'm in exactly the same boat as all of us. I'm a sinner. There's a lovely story. I might finish with this. It's just real simple, but well, there's quite a few stories that I'd really like to read, but no, I'll just do this one. He goes, I'll just do two. So this is one of the desert fathers. He goes, there was a brother at Skittis, which is the place, who had committed a fault. So they called a meeting. We love our meetings. They called a meeting to judge him. And and they invited Abba Moses, who was one of the sort of figures that crops up a lot in the literature, who was obviously a really humble guy. Anyway, he refused to go. He wouldn't go to this meeting. And the priest sent someone to say to him, they're all waiting for you. You know, so the priest is there, all the people, you know, they're all ready, and they're waiting for this guy to come and join them, Abba Moses. So Moses got up and set off. He took a leaky jug and filled it with water and took it with him. The others came out to meet him and said, what is this, Father? And the old man said to them, my sins run out behind me. You know, this is in the desert. They could see the kind of trail of water. My sins run out behind me and I cannot see them. Yet here I am coming to sit in judgment on the mistakes of someone else. When they heard this, they called off the meeting. And the last one is this. A brother who had sinned was turned out of the church by the priest. Abba Basarion got up and followed him out. He said, I too am a sinner. Isn't that lovely? So I think loving our neighbor as ourselves, connected to loving God and not separating them, we can't. It's all of a piece, and it does involve our death. We live and die with our neighbour. It can be a bit painful, but it's worth it. And there's no joy greater than putting someone in touch with Christ, with the love of God. There's no joy greater than that. And seeing, whoa, that connection happen, the light turn on in someone's eyes, their hearts open to the love of God. That's what we pray for. Amen.
Thank you, Mark. What a challenging morning. Challenge to look beyond the words and challenge to change our hearts. Please stand for worship.
Lord, you are...